talk about sliding under the gun. You are listening to The Ooze. This is your host, Jason Sorrell, your host, TC Downey. TC, what's going on tonight?
What's up, man? How you doing? I was kind of wondering if you were having some technical difficulties or just skidding in on your ass hairs.
All right, yeah, we just I don't know, man. We're watching football. I think we both kind of fell asleep on the couch, and my alarm went off, and I thought I had a little bit of time, but apparently not. So here we are. So what's going on, man? I mean, how you been?
I've been all right, man. I've been immersed deeply in writing a new page for the Eminent Mind site. Well, other than that, I mean, everything else has been pretty much, well, status quo, if I can use that loosely without, sounding like too much of a bore. It's been my normal, everyday sort of deal, so.
Right on. We're just we're doing the same thing here. I mean, just continue on doing what we're doing and everything, keeping track of the news, kind of following what's going on with the different things that are happening, and just watching things grow with the 3.0 site, the Eminent Mind. I got your message, so I'm going to be reviewing some of that information tonight. Eminentmind.info for those people who haven't checked out the site yet. Tonight, we're kind of going to get back to the whole strategy session theme of what we're doing here on the show this evening. So if you want to call in, the phone number is 347-989-1371. We've been talking for weeks now about doing something about our connection to the system, disengaging from the system, working on some sort of buffer between yourself and the system at large, dealing with transgression. And in my own thinking, my thoughts have turned to capitalism, and having been a big supporter of the ideas of capitalism in the past, and have come to by interacting with a bunch of different folks that have supported and have contributed to things like the 3.0 site, I've kind of changed my mind and turned a corner, really, on this whole capitalism as it's applied here in our society. And it seems, it's not just the society in the West, but it seems the world over that it just colors everything. It taints everything. And what we wanted to kind of address this evening is while not getting into any definite expressions of, how one might transgress or how one might deal with this this capitalism, we're going to be talking about hypothetical possibilities that will allow a person to do something. And one of the writers on the 3.0 site actually posted something that really stuck with me this week, that transgression is not a matter of any major effort on any one person's part, that nobody's going to be – I mean, the system built up over decades. So nobody's going to tear it down with one major action. No one major action is going to be successful. Instead, it's a matter of thousands of small, consistent efforts by all people for all purposes, for all reasons, chipping away at that system. So it comes to me in thinking of the death of a thousand cuts, basically. So we got a caller on the line, kind of holding on already while we do our intro. Do you want to add?
I already actually answered this call prior to the show coming on. This person is just hanging out listening to the show. So if they in fact have some input to put in, they'll need to call back in. So
all right.
That's just kind of the way that'll go.
Cool. All right. Well, so again, and this is a strategy session. So we want folks to call in, and we want folks to share their ideas. So if you do have some thoughts as we get rolling, just give us a call.
All right. I just wanted to address maybe, a misunderstanding. The L316 site is not the 3.0 site. It is just a 3.0 site. Every site involved in this project is a 3.0 site. So it, rather than being one singular web-based home, it's kind of the entire collective acts as the home. So just to kind of clear up the confusion of what you were saying earlier to our listeners, the article that Jason's referencing is the on the L316 site, and it is entitled We Are 3.0.
Right on. But it goes more to, you know, to illustrate this whole idea that it's not just one person or one group or one entity doing these different things. It's a mass effort, and sometimes it's coordinated, sometimes it's not. I guess another thing that kind of strikes me about this is that while the effort is to, you know, deal with and take down and do what you can with that system, with whatever it is you're assaulting, you do it on an individual level. You do it for yourself first. That there's no necessarily doing for the group or doing for the cause unless that it somehow has some sort of benefit for you. That this means you do what you can, and no one can set the standard. No one can judge you by what it is can say you're not doing enough or you're doing too much or what have you. Whatever it is you can get, whatever it is you can accomplish. Whatever it is you do, as long as you're aware of what's going on and you're taking steps to deal with it, whatever manner you see fit, then it's what we're looking for. So, you know, go ahead.
I was going to agree with you and say that the idea of some kind of a system coming together to fight a system in itself is kind of a futile idea, if you know what I mean. You've already kind of created the paradox before you've begun. So I think that's why it's important to focus on the fact that it's about the individual effort.
Right. Yeah, trying to think of a new system or what have you and as a replacement, or worse yet, some of the things we see going on where people are actually trying to use the tools or use the methodology of the system to change or modify the system. Now, it's one thing to turn a system's resources against itself, and I think we're going to touch on some of that tonight. It's one thing to use the different routes in a way that the system wasn't, you know, it isn't expected, or kind of overloads or tweaks the way things are going on. But the end result in those efforts are basically the dismantling of that system. There are a lot of efforts, you know, we talk about the Occupy movement, some of the different expressions of the Occupy movement. I know that this doesn't speak for everyone, but most of the people that you see get on the news cameras and everything else, a lot of them are talking about how they want to change the way things are done. They want to change politics in Washington. They want to change the way society operates and what have you. Most of us don't feel that way. We don't want to change the way, you know, the system is working or what have you. We want to take the system apart because the system doesn't work. The idea of capitalism, it doesn't work. It makes people slaves, and we're not we don't want any part of it anymore. We don't want to participate in that anymore. And something, you know, that has bothered me is how deeply mired many of us are in this thing, and it took me a while to kind of come to some sort of terms with, well, what is it that one has to, what is it one can do while you're doing what you can to not be reliant on the system. There's limitations. You'll hear female Satan on some of these on different shows here, and she talks about how, you know, having children it places a noose around her neck, basically. Because there's only so much she can do before the state uses the fact that she's a mother and, you know, threatens to take away her children to kind of bring her back in line. But there are things that can be done. So these are kind of some of the hypotheticals we're going to be talking about tonight.
Right on. I can't really think of anything to immediately add on that. So is there a particular place that you wanted to take off at?
Well, I wanted to start and just real briefly, and because we've been knocking this around for a few weeks, real briefly first of all, I'm, this is my thing is taking down capitalism, doing something about capitalism, and we've been talking about trying to disengage or distance yourself from the system, and we've covered that ground, I think, it's about as thoroughly as we can. We've gone all the way up to the line of talking about everything legal you could possibly do. So we've explored all the legal options, from fucking clipping coupons to, growing your own food to doing whatever, all the different things you can to put some distance between yourself and the system. But these things we're talking about doing are stopgap measures. You're still engaged in that system. And again, it's because you're mired in it. Any act, it seems, that is to be free by the standards of that system is a criminal act. So by default, anyone who seeks to disengage from that system is a criminal. So it's a matter of, in my mind, not necessarily making the choice to commit a criminal act, but in fact accepting that your mode of behavior is criminal and then moving forward from there, wrapping your head around that. So, but again, you have to be responsible for yourself. You can't be stupid when you're doing these kinds of things or when you're engaged in this kind of behavior, and we cannot suggest that anyone engage in anything, just you're at your own risk, basically. So, don't try this shit at home.
Right.
So I guess, since we're moving in that direction, since we're going to kind of, cross that line a little bit, I want to talk about having a job, first of all. The concept of, here you are, you're opposed to the system, you want to, you want to disengage from capitalism, but, one of the things that our society requires is that if you're going to have utilities and have shelter and have food and have kids and everything else, well, then you have to have a way to pay the bills. You have to have some sort of gainful employment. And so that means having some sort of job. Typically it's something that means working for somebody else, working as part of, part of that system, as a cog within that machine. And I think the idea that one of the things we kind of need to wrap our heads around is that you have some choices. Even though you're forced to engage in that capitalistic process, you can either choose to be subordinate or subservient to it. And by being subservient to it, following the rules, doing what you're told, doing what you need to do, and you're keeping your nose clean and basically becoming more and more mired in it, sinking down even further, or you can recognize that it's a position that you're taking under protest. That I don't think anybody is born a human being that naturally chooses to, at 18, after they've completed their 12 years of training to become a worker drone, that they want to put on those shackles, so they want to put on that chain and engage in that. So if you're doing it under protest, well, then any act you commit while in this, in this effort, you're committing as a protester. You're somebody who, is just that's the effort you're trying to make. So if I were ever to go back to a straight-laced job, and I think we're going to get into that a little bit as well, because there's alternatives to that. If I were to ever go back to a straight-laced job where, you're working for some, company or corporation or what have you, if those were the choices I had to make to, to gain the things that I need to keep my family and household, then it would be with the intent that by whatever means that I can get away with, by whatever means that I am capable of, the risks I'm willing to take, I'm going to do some damage. I'm going to ensure that I get more than my paycheck. I'm going to ensure that I can inflict my little blows to what it is that whatever it is I'm engaged in. So it's
right
a mentality
on.
Of
right.
It's a mentality of basically you're a prisoner of war when you're engaged at the workplace, versus a subservient slave to that system.
Right. So that means if you you got a scalpel and you got a chance to cut the the main tendon in the back of somebody's foot without them knowing you did it. You take that swipe and go.
Right, right. And it's the idea of the scalpel is an opportune analogy, because you want to, in my mind, act on in a surgical manner, that you want to make sure that the cut you're making is effective, it is subtle, and most importantly, that it has some benefit to you immediately. One hypothetical situation I can imagine is you're at a workplace, and at a workplace, you know, they have all kinds of supplies. You know, they have all kinds of things they use to maintain their workplace, from copy paper, toilet paper, pens and pencils, cleaning supplies, all kinds of things that are, you know, they get at a significantly reduced rate than you would get if you were to purchase at a grocery store. They get those things through subsidies they receive by having this business and employing people and everything else. So it's your tax dollars that are helping paying for these things anyways. So if these things were to, by rate of attrition, disappear or be consumed faster than what was going on before you were employed there, then you end up having less need to go out and purchase these things on your own. That's one of the things I think, hypothetically, one could do is begin. I had a sergeant in the Army who called this idea liberating materials for your own needs.
Right on. I think liberation of materials can go. It can go even further than that. You can liberate whatever the product is, whether it's being sold or produced as well, and create an excess cost that wasn't initially factored into their business plan.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you end up in a position, if you're in a position where you're working with a business or company that produces goods or retails goods or what have you, especially if you're in a situation where you can interrupt inventory control and you liberate certain materials and everything else, not only are you're inflicting that blow that way, but you're also providing yourself resources that you can then use and for your own. If you don't use it for your own, it has some resale value. And this is, these are one of the things you do. Or if you work at some place where you don't have the option of, there's not a product, let's say. There's all kinds of businesses right now where there's no product in a sense, but there's a service being provided. And it's a service that, there's all kinds of services out there which are required by law, but not necessarily, anything tangible that anybody can hold on to. So it's just processing paperwork. The means of production for those places are computers, their telephones, television monitors, things like that. If those kinds of things vanish from a business, well, again, more money a business has to spend, more capital they have to burn, less able are they able to conduct their business. And of course, then should those liberated materials appear, in your household for your use or your resale, well, then you have something you've gained at the cost of these people who are enslaving you.
Right, right. I mean, one perfect example of what you're talking about would be the proverbial cable guy. The guy who, for an extra 50 in his pocket will hook you up with all the pay-per-view channels and whatever else. I don't know that they had that ability still, but I was always a big fan of the cable guy because they got that little bit of extra, by helping you rip off the company. So,
and I think that's another direction also to discuss, that if you have to be employed, and that, I mean, that again, you, if it's it should be, if you have to basically work for somebody to get the things you need. And this is a huge crime in my mind against people, is that You can't go out and get your resource. You can't go out and sustain yourself based on your own effort. You have to deal with the middleman. And that, I think, is what encompasses capitalism in our society. Capitalism is not the free exchange of goods and services for, you know, other goods and services. That's not what happens in capitalism. What happens in capitalism is that a middleman determines the rate of exchange, the means of exchange, and gets a cut from every exchange made. So any effort that you make, only a portion of that effort are you going to actually get something for yourself. A portion of that effort goes to pay whoever, you know, is decided that they, you know, they control the rate of exchange or they control the means of exchange. And that's bullshit. That's total bullshit. You know, if you want to go out to the, you know, to the local market or what have you, and you want to, you know, either, you know, buy groceries with, you know, dollars and cents, or want to have the option of, you know, earning groceries through your own labor, that should be, those things should be available to you. But in our society, they're not. Those things are not available to you. So when you're addressing, you know, when you're working someplace, you know, it doesn't matter what level you're working at. There's always, of course, you know, people coming to you for those services and everything else. If you have any ability whatsoever to, especially when you're talking about people who you're working with, who you're coordinating your efforts with, whether you're a fry cook or you're working a window at a fast food place, if you're able to slide an extra, you know, whatever, sandwich or taco, whatever the hell that is, into that bag, or you're able to, you know, you're working a retail position for the upcoming Avarice holiday, and you're able to, you know, process, make it look like you're processing somebody's order when, in fact, the items are just going in the bags and back in the shopping cart and out the door. You know, these are things, again, possibilities that one should consider when, you know, when in a situation where, again, you're not employed by choice. You're employed because you have no other options. So call in number 347-989-1371. And these are the kinds of things we're going to be we want to talk about here over the next couple hours, strategies for the attack. And I guess another idea I wanted to bring up is that the way I see things going, we've got two different kinds of efforts going on with this effort to deal with the system. On one hand, we've got folks who are assaulting the system directly. They're attacking its institutions. They're attacking its means of development. They're out there protesting. They're out there engaging and making sure that that the tax dollars are being spent on, you know, officer overtime and everything else. The real effort being made in the Occupy movement, let's say, this is this kind of thing, not the bullshit you see on TV, not these talking heads you see that are just another political, you know, flunky. Saying that this is what they want to accomplish or what have you, but the real anarchists, the real people at the core of these things who are, you know, just trying to, you know, show people that there's a different way. So direct assault is one thing to do. The other thing, of course, to do is to a subtle kind of back room kind of thing where you're creating for yourself a base or a means to live in a manner that's disengaged from that system. So, you know, it's one thing to, you know, to throw a Molotov cocktail. It's another thing entirely to start moving resources away from the system that the system was expecting to have and move all, you know, these resources towards your own means, towards your own efforts.
Right on, right. I mean, that's such a huge, I don't know, I can see it as being small efforts all consistently moving towards one greater effort. I don't think that you're going to, at least not anytime in the near future, actually get some form of real cohesion to take away enough resources from the system to cause any collapse. So that's just kind of weakening it. You're going to have to find a high point or a high ground to it and beat it when the army's, you know, when they're folding in, when they're forced up against you.
Right. And that's why when you're doing these kinds of things, you're doing these things for your own. You want to make sure you're taking care of yourself. You know, the idea of, you know, it'd be wonderful if we had 100,000, you know, fry cooks who were making sure that extra burgers were going out to certain bags, to certain people who were, you know, engaged in some sort of underground exchange with them. But if, since we don't have that situation, well, then if it's not to you, any benefit to you immediately to do it, well, you're not going to engage in that kind of behavior anyways. So you want to make sure you're looking out for yourself. You want to make sure that you're taking care of you. So if the opportunity presents itself, while, no, again, we can't say, you know, you should do this. If you're thinking the way that we're thinking about things, I would strongly encourage you to do so. And again, because any effort, any mentality that says, you know, I want to be disengaged from the system, I don't like the way things are, and I want what I see going on, it has to be stopped. It has to be destroyed. But if you make that decision in your mind, you've gone from being a law-abiding citizen to a criminal. Your effort to be free is a criminal act. So this criminality, you know, basically what I'm saying here is just get over it, because it's there. So it's what's going on. And, you know, if you have the ability, again, I'm referring to some of the things I've read, and this was some time ago. If you have the ability to embezzle funds from a company they're working from, if you're in that position to where you can actually, you know, commit embezzlement and choose to do so, again, speaking hypothetically, then you commit embezzlement because maybe you hate the company, maybe you hate the capitalist system, maybe you want to see it torn down, but you're also benefiting from that act. So you go from, you know, something major like, you know, like embezzlement, like you know, copyright infringement, redistribution of, you know, intellectual property, those kinds of, you know, highbrow, high-collar kind of, you know, efforts to very, you know, low to the ground, very, you know, direct in your face. You know, I made sure that there was, you know, the boss ordered a case of toilet paper, and that case of toilet paper disappeared from the inventory. But now I don't got to buy fucking toilet paper for a year.
Right on. That guy called back in, so I'm assuming he wants on my line.
Okay, you want to bring him on?
Yes.
I'm gonna bring on a call. The phone number to call in again is 347-989-1371. Any thoughts you guys have? But caller from the 720 area code, you're on the news. It's on your brain, man.
Hey, yeah, I'm listening to this. I think it's interesting, and I have a few strategies I can contribute, but. First off, I wanted to say I think that, at least in my opinion, I think it's important to distinguish between the kinds of companies that are game and the kinds that aren't. You know, in my opinion, you're not game if you're not receiving, you know, any sort of government subsidies, if you're not entitled to any sort of special government monopoly, or if you're not entitled to, like, you know, the tax dollars of the people, or if you're not engaging in business directly with the government, like, i.e. military contractors and stuff like that. So I think that if you're outside of that and you're just trying to make it like everybody else and you're not feeding off the tit of government, I think that you haven't really crossed the line. Like, for instance, you know, I subscribe to the idea of, like, the non-aggression principle, and people are like, oh, well, how can you subscribe to that when, like, if somebody comes into your house, you know, you're going to shoot them? And it's like, well, that person that's entered my home, they've expressed to me, you know, that they don't subscribe to the same principle. Therefore, that's not the rule of law we're going to apply. And I can do whatever I want at that point. But until someone's, like, actually aggressed, or someone's actually, like, done something to me, you know, and then that could be, like, stealing tax money, you know, that I'm forced to pay at gunpoint, or that could be engaging, you know, with the United States government that, like, oppresses me or whatever, you know, then now you've just basically said, well, okay, stealing's okay, because that's what we do, you know, so you've condoned stealing, therefore you can't complain if someone else steals from you. But for a company who hasn't engaged in that, I think that you lose the moral high road of saying, like, look, this is wrong, it's stealing, because you're doing it too. Does that make sense?
Right, I think that every person has to make a kind of decision to make sure that if they choose, it's one thing to... I'm going to say every mom-and-pop company that you work for, every mom-and-pop business you work for is going to be on the up-and-up or going to be something you want to support. But it's one thing to get a job at your local mom-and-pop and do this bullshit. It's another thing to work for, you know, Acme Incorporated and do this.
I think we kind of know, like, which companies are, are doing this. You know, I mean, there's a huge company that everybody goes to and shops for clothes and food and everything else, and we all have them in our community. And that company depends on government subsidies, you know, because they don't want to pay their workers. Therefore, they make the American people pay their workers in other ways, like food stamps and all this other nonsense, you know. And those are the kind of companies I think that people should really hone in and focus on, you know, because those companies are, they've already engaged in immoral behavior and said, oh, well, there's no such thing as, like, morality. Like, whatever's legal is what we'll do. And then we say, well, we just don't recognize the rule of law. Therefore, you know, anything's game at that point. You know, because you're not subscribing to any system of morality.
But, and I agree. And to your point, you know, a company like GE that in 2010 made $14.2 billion in profits and did not pay a dime in taxes. They actually turned in a tax form that, had it been printed out, would have stood, you know, stacked page on top of page. It would have stood 19 feet tall from one of the estimates I'd heard. They paid no taxes on $14.2 billion in profits. They had government loopholes and government laws. So what they did was perfectly legal. But you or I try to avoid getting or paying our taxes or what have you if we have an income, and we're going to jail. So
I have no problem with them like not paying taxes. I'm perfectly okay with that. I think that's actually the moral standard, is that you shouldn't have to pay taxes. You know, it should be voluntary. But the problem I have with GE is the fact that a lot of those profits actually come from government. So now the government's putting a gun in people's face and saying, hey, you have to give us money, and then they redistribute or liberate that money to GE. So GE, like, cannot sustain itself, can't have profits without that government monopoly and without that use of force and violence. And then that's where I say, okay, well, you know, your system's immoral, like you're participating in something, and as a matter of fact, you, like, stole from me. You directly stole from me because I didn't have a choice to pay that tax money, and then you know, hired lobbyists or hired guns to go into the government and say, hey, give us these subsidies, and I want you to make sure that you create these barriers to entry that protect us but insulate us in this system. So the other thing I want to get real quick is capitalism. Biggest problem I have with that is, like, nobody understands, like, what it is, you know. I mean, nobody can really define it. Like, the liberals, like, define it as, you know, I think they have, like, a semi-realistic view of what it is, but then they mix it in with, like, free markets and think that, you know, all exchange for money and goods and services to some degree is, like, a bad thing. And then you have Republicans and conservatives that think that capitalism is this idea of a free market. And, you know, I consider myself an anarcho-capitalist, but I hate the term capitalist. I would say, like, free market anarchist, because it was actually Marx that coined the term, you know, capitalism. And since he coins the term, he kind of gets to say what it is. And what he described is, like, not a good system, you know. So, and that's really the system we have today. So all these people think, oh, well, capitalism, we could just do it a different way or something. But you can't confuse the free market, because as long as you have monopoly over, like, money, the monetary system and everything, there can be no free market. So it's a messed up system where really you just get to use force and violence to determine winners and losers, and there's really no competition, you know, to speak of. I mean, we see it on the small local level, and those guys have to fiercely compete. But then when you look at, you know, the larger system, there's no competition. I mean, who's GE really in competition with, you know? So you look at that, and I think people have a bad perception of what capitalism is. Like, they misunderstand it from one spectrum to the other without ever – and I think it's important to sit there and have these discussions, because if you ever were to be able to, like, crumble this system down to the ground – you're going to need to replace it with something, some sort of ideology. And if you don't have any ideology, then what's the point, you know?
Right on. So what are some of your strategies that you think would be beneficial to this process?
Well, okay, so, you know, the big thing is, you know, I see the argument of, like, something that directly benefits you, but there's plenty of things the things that directly benefit you are the easiest ways to get caught. So theoretically, like, let's say that you are the short order chef or something. If you automatically always include, like, a free burger or two free burgers or something, then now you've created the expectation for those customers that they're always going to get a free burger. And when they don't, they're going to be kind of pissed off, you know. So now they're going to be sort of upset with that company, and their production costs go up and everything, and they don't know what's happening. They have no idea. And that's the other thing is, like, when you're doing this, you have no way of communicating to the company, like, this is happening because of this or that. So I leave it up to their superstition. But that doesn't really matter as long as the end result happens. And another thing you could do is, like, taking their coupons after customers turn them in and, like, redistributing those coupons again, you know, or making your own coupons, you know, and distributing those. Like, they're going to be used for a period of time, and then eventually, like, corporates can put out a memo or whatever. The end result will be a lot of really angry customers. And customers, you know, satisfaction is actually has a cost equated to it. So the more you can interfere with their business process and, like, upset their customers, the more it costs them. And the more it costs them, the harder it is for them to compete.
Now, that's right, about that being used as a strategy between different businesses where – somebody would print up bullshit coupons for a company that they were opposed to or a rival or what have you. They would distribute these bullshit coupons, and of course you take the coupons to this company and they can't honor it. Well, then it does exactly what you're saying. I guess, and the idea that, you know, a short order chef handing out free burgers, it's not a matter of just handing out free burgers to just any fucking buddy, but it's, you know, it's if you, and this is something we're going to get into when we talk about coordinated effort. It's making sure that the people that are on the inside with you get that little extra from you at the cost of your employer.
That's an ideal situation. But at the same time, like, if you're going to hand out free burgers to people that are sort of in your tribe, why not just hand them out to everybody? Because that maximizes damage.
Right, it maximizes the damage, but it also limits the amount of time you have to commit the damage. As you were saying earlier, eventually somebody's going to catch you in the act, and you want to stay in that position, creating that damage for as long as possible. As a matter of fact, if you can move up the chain and get your own people hired in below you to assist you with that process, I think that's, you know, even better.
No, I agree with that. You know, and there's some other stuff that can happen too. I mean, wear and tear is calculated for in the business cycle. So, you know, you know that you're going to have, like, certain things that wear out quicker than others, and you budgeted to replace them and stuff. Well, what if things just continually wear out constantly? Then, you know, there's no way that they're going to be able to directly say, oh, well, this person or that person did it. Like, for instance, it's a bad thing for, like, if you have high-speed scanners at your workplace, or if you have, you know, any sort of laser jets or anything. It's a bad thing for, like, paper to go through that has a bunch of staples in it, you know. And it's something that can be done quickly. You know, toner can be emptied out, erased, can be, you know, dunked in the toilet for a little bit and then put back in. Things like this. And so the company, and it's going to take a very long time for them to figure that out. Probably never. They're going to keep, you know, blaming their supplier, blaming it on defective product. They're going to have bad supplier relationships, which is also good. So, I mean, there's lots of stuff you can do to kind of mess things up that are more passive-aggressive and that there's really no accountability for. And there's not much accountability from the top down in most companies, you know. And stuff that is inventoried, that's like the first thing that they look for, but they don't really look for stuff out of inventory, just like wear and tear. So, you know, you can kind of have some fun destroying some stuff, bathroom fixtures, things where they have to hire outside contractors. And if you're in a position to hire those outside contractors, then, you know, bid it out and go to the most expensive company, you know, and you know, so a lot of things like that can be done to, like, waste resources and stuff. And then, especially if you're in a position to train others, you can sort of train them to be less efficient and create new systems which are less efficient.
Well, and along those same lines of thinking, if you're creating issues in the system, you know, damaging equipment, dealing with, you know, that kind of thing, where the process becomes less efficient, if you're still getting paid, especially if you have an hourly wage, you're still getting paid, and you know, by the hour, the same rate, whether you are able to do your job because everything's working properly, or whether you are unable to do your job because your computer's fucked up. So,
Right. Yeah,
I totally agree with that. Right.
That can be done. Like, the biggest problem with these companies is that they create this corporate culture where you have, like, these sort of law and order rule followers, and we've all seen them in the workplace if we've ever worked retail before. And these guys think that really if they follow all the rules and everything they're told, that they're going to, you know, the sky's the limit, they're going to advance to the top. And then you see that same person in the same place like 7 years later, you know. But they still have their job. So you can do a lot of things to, like, mess up processes and procedures, you know, like, for instance, removing stuff from employee manuals or maybe even rewriting it to kind of get them in on it, too, without them realizing that they're in fact, doing things they're not supposed to be doing. You know, you can create, you know, myths within the company that, well, if, you know, if every 10 that we sell or whatever, it's customary that we replace one, or, you know, there's lots and lots of stuff that you can do to really make that business not work right. I mean, pretty much think of, like, if it were your business, not one done, and then start there, you know.
Right on. Yeah, and these are all really good ideas, so cool.
Well, I'll just listen for now then. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Right on. So outside of the fact that our caller seemed to still be overtly concerned with morality and rather than ethics or principles, but I think what he was transcribing as morality was ethics and principles, or at least he was trying to. All the rest of what he had to say I thought was pretty good.
Well, and a lot of what I'm reading, again, coming from these different sources, when you talk about honor, there is a big, you know, push. You know, it's amorality, but it's acting in an honorable fashion. If you're going after, you know, the mom and pop, well, you have to have some sort of rationale in your mind that it can't just be that these folks are engaged in capitalism. You know, these people are as mired in it as you are. And so you're not talking about, we're not talking about assaulting. I basically, in my mind, if you can put a face to it, if there's a face on it, you know the people that you're dealing with or what have you, and they, you know, they're the owners of what and whatever it is they're engaged in, unless they are, you know, just, you know, scumbags. Well, then that's not the kind of thing you're talking about. But if you're talking about a faceless corporate entity, again, GE, you know, not paying taxes, finding loopholes and everything else. Well, they have these lobbyists that go in and they create the loopholes. They make sure that those subsidies are available to them, so they help make sure that they get those profits and everything. And they take advantage of advantages that you and I, as tax-paying entities as well. GE is set up as a corporate entity. It's a legal person as far as the government's concerned in many ways. But you and I, also being legal persons in a real sense, don't have the same opportunities, the same leverage GE has. So that's some bullshit. So,
I don't know if you caught it, but my girl was nice enough tonight to link an article to me on my site. Apparently, the European Union issued a commission that tested the hydration factor of water or bottled water, and it came to a conclusive showing that bottled water does not rehydrate a person. And so, therefore, any company selling bottled water that says that it will rehydrate you or suggests that it will rehydrate you instantly results in a 2-year prison term. Did you see that?
So bottled water will not rehydrate you.
Will not rehydrate you, yes. As a matter of fact, it's I don't know, puzzling how our ancestors survived if water wouldn't hydrate them.
Yeah, that's kind of, I'm scratching my head about that one. It's like, and my thinking is, well, what is it they're trying to get out of that, you know, that kind of legislation? What is it they're hoping to achieve? Are they putting the screws to an industry that they don't feel they're getting a big enough piece of? Or... Are they appeasing some special interest group?
What I'm kind of thinking it is, and I mean the article itself wasn't long enough or in depth enough to really know everything that transpired behind the scenes, and I just caught it like an hour before the show. But my initial impression is that Gatorade or Powerade or Vitamin Water decided that they just weren't getting a big enough piece of the thirst market. That, you know, people were maybe drinking out of the tap more now that it's, you know, the cost of water so much. And so in an effort to, squash out some of their competition. And, they pay certain commissioners on this commission a little healthy back kick or whatever, and they push through a legislation that basically the end result of it is the ignorant people think water does not equal hydration.
This just underscores in my mind, what the caller was talking about, what we were talking about, that, capitalism, there's something inherently wrong with capitalism as we see it, as it's being expressed in our society. We're talking about water, okay? The planet is, 75-80% water. Water falls from the fucking skies. It runs in, rivers and creeks and everything else downstream towards the ocean. It's fucking everywhere. It's in your body. It's wherever you can get. There's water any fucking place. But what is this system set up for us? Well, if you want water, you have to pay for it. Okay? Yeah, there's a filtration process, there's a cleaning process, and that's all understandable. And that's, that's helpful and that's good. But human beings were, getting free fucking water up until the turn of, the industrial age, and doing just fine. And I don't want to go back to, the filthy fucking water or whatever that we had to drink or what have you. But if you're going to implement these safeguards and everything else, what happened? I hate to use this term, but for the good of fucking society, would it just make sense that, for the people, the betterment of the community that I'm in, we're going to go ahead and set up this filtration plant. Because who wants to pay for water? When it's free, when it's fucking everywhere. But no, capitalism has found a way to make sure that even something that is free, that's available to any fucking buddy who wants to take the effort to gather it for themselves, not only is it free and available, and has capitalism made it so that you have to pay for it, there's different ways, different levels on which you can pay for this water, for this free resource, but I'm sure there are rules or laws against just taking water from, some sort of a rain basin or something like that, and giving it to your children. I'm sure that there's legislation someplace about having standing water in some place that hasn't been treated to prevent you from gathering it for free for yourself.
I'm certain that's probably the case. You probably violate some kind of health code doing such. But honestly, to store water in any long-term capacity does require some kind of chemical treating. That would normally be offered by different types of rock that are usually found in the natural beds of rivers and oceans and such. But, still, all in all, what kind of makes me wonder is, I see a lot of fucking people dependent on bottled water. Like, that's all they drink. So, on the one hand of the spectrum, maybe what they're selling as bottled water doesn't hydrate you, but it's the fact that they are kind of advertising the idea that water doesn't hydrate. Even though that word bottles on the front of it, most people don't pick up more than 15-20% of whatever they read. So, that by itself kind of scares me. It's an irresponsible thing to do, just as it's an irresponsible thing to do, advertise something to hydrate you that doesn't, if that is the case. And the whole problem is that you don't know who is perpetuating the ignorance worse.
Well, it's the same kind of, and the caller brought up this, an excellent strategy. That if you're engaged in a system, if you're engaged in a business or workplace, that you start tweaking the rules, especially for the people who follow rules, who follow guidelines, and they go with what's written. If you have access and you can change those things, if you can actually change the culture in that business to get them to believe things that aren't necessarily true about whatever it is they're engaged in, well, it's that same kind of mind fuck that is being played on us in this very thing you're talking about. Water doesn't hydrate you. That smacks against common sense that water doesn't hydrate you, and I'm assuming they've got some other thing that they're going to say actually hydrates you, and this is better for you. That movie Idiocracy, I think, was the film where they had some soda company that, you know, you made it so that you couldn't drink other fluids. And this is all there was available to you. They're actually using it on their crops and shit like that, which is why there's no food or anything. There you go. It's Rondo, the thirst mutilator. That's right. So, crazy. It just seems like it's going down that road.
You know, I was thinking also when I was listening to our caller describe, slipping the extra burger, so to speak, or whatever. A lot of these established big company type food businesses, whether it's fast food or formal dining restaurants, set up certain parameters so that if you're not satisfied with your meal or whatever, you get some kind of bonus on it. Well, my theory is that you always go after that bonus. Could call once a week. Let's say you want to have McDonald's on Thursday. You call the McDonald's on your fucking way home or whatever, and you complain about your order, and you tell them exactly what you're going to want. You know, most people have their regulars anyways, or at least have an idea of what they might be in the mood for come that time. When you make that call, they normally will put you in the book, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a chance to collect a free meal, one that you didn't necessarily pay for in the beginning.
Right on. And, well, restaurants like McDonald's, they have a no-questions-asked policy more often than not. So if you order food through the drive-thru and you decide you want an extra sandwich, you get your bag, you get your order, and then you go back into the restaurant with your bag, and you've taken the sandwich out and left it in your car, you go, no, I didn't get a sandwich, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think I've actually talked about this on the show before, but take advantage of the internet. All these different, you know, if you don't want to eat at McDonald's, if you want to eat at a little bit, a restaurant that gets a little higher marks as far as, you know, quality of food, all these different chain franchise restaurants, you know, Logan's, Texas Roadhouse, Olive Garden, just you think of them. There's a slew of them out there. They all have these websites, and all these websites have customer comment forms where you can lodge complaints. And you complain about whatever it is you want to complain about and say that you were in the restaurant on this particular date at this particular time. And you will be contacted, or somebody will email you or what have you, their apologies about your complaint or whatever it is. And more often, they just send you a gift card, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20, whatever, you know, a free meal, your comp, a free pizza, whatever it is. They'll send that shit to you. There are people who actually make a bit of an income from that they just go, you know, restaurant after restaurant after restaurant online. They'll spend a few hours, you know, a day, once or so, a month or whatever, and, you know, file these complaints and then, of course, reap the rewards.
Of course. And if they do it consistently enough or inconsistently enough, I mean, it can make a hell of an impact, man. You know, when a company's giving out hundreds of dollars a week that they're not anticipating, you know, that kind of thing reflects not only in their immediate income stream, but when they're dealing with these bigger lenders, you know, the lenders are going, wait a minute, this is the numbers aren't matching up. You've projected this, but you're always ending up over here. What the fuck?
There's a comment in the chat room saying, go ahead.
No, please.
Oh, I was going to say, there's a comment in the chat room. Somebody's saying that I will never pay for food ever again. You know what? If it were up to me, in my mind, no one should have to pay for food anyways. Other than taking the time to gather whatever it is, food, again, just like water, it's everywhere. You know, it's just a matter of finding it. It's just a matter of preparing it or whatever. You can do these things for yourself. You know, if a restaurateur wants to be, you know, if you want to share something you have, and this is, again, the fallacy in capitalism, if you want to go to somebody who is better preparing food or better gathering food than you are and come up with some sort of exchange between you and that person to pay for your meal, then that's, you know, there should be that option. There should be that opportunity. But, you know, the method of exchange, the means of exchange is set. The type of food that can be served or not served is set. the way it has to be served, the process that it has to be given out is set. And in every transaction, there's a third party putting its hand in your pocket, in the restaurateur's pocket, in the farmer's pocket, the people, the butcher's pocket. Everybody's having a little piece taken away from them by this system. That's the bullshit in it.
Right. It's not even a middleman, so to speak. It's you're paying everybody. You know, you got taxes, you've got Social Security, you got this, you got that, you got a fucking tag. Everybody's
right.
Getting that piece of you.
Right. Instead of you, through your direct effort, making an exchange for the direct effort of someone else, and just an even exchange, the two of you agreed what the method of exchange is going to be, what will be given for what is taken, and you have that exchange. And I think that's where the idea of an underground economy comes in. So, again, these are different ideas, and we're kind of moving towards this. When we're talking about initially, when we started this discussion weeks ago, it was developing a buffer between yourself and the system, taking steps to reduce your outgoing resources and to increase your incoming resources, you know, so that you have this cushion between you and what you see going on out in the world. And then we move to this mentality where now you're going to start taking more aggressive actions against your employers, against the system. That you're going to start doing things to undermine what you see going on. From there, I think what you start doing, we kind of hinted and talked and touched on this a little bit, is you start coordinating your efforts with people around you who share in that mentality. Whether it's, making sure that if you go through, people will know that if I have my tribe or whatever, and I've got somebody working at, there's somebody working at this grocery store, there's somebody working at this restaurant, there's somebody working for, at this gas station, whatever. Somebody mentioned Bike Club in the chat room. So you've got the Project Mayhem going on. You've got all these different people who perform low-level services in society, but necessary services, and within your tribe, you exchange these services among one another, that it's kind of coordinated. If you're working for some corporate entity where we're talking about where you're getting office supplies or computers or laptops or whatever, you're making these things are disappearing inexplicably from your employer, and then you have, for whatever reason, again, this is all hypothetical, the ability to redistribute those things once you've gotten your use from them or made your profit from them, what have you. I would see people sending care packages, if you will. Here's a box gets shipped, and it's got, a ream of copy paper and a toilet paper and pens and pencils and whatever other little shit you've got, whatever it is you've got that you don't need, and you're sending that to whoever it is you're dealing with because, again, these things, it's one thing to deal with people in your community, and I think it's important that we start reaching out to people who are around us. But there are plenty of people online who, if we started coordinating our efforts, we'd have this little exchange going on, basically, where, here's a bunch of shit that you might find useful. And so it gets to you and you take it, and it means that you have this less amount of stuff that you have to buy on your own. These things are taken care of, so you don't have to engage in the capitalist system to get those things. You already have those materials available to you through your connections. For lack of a better word, Project Mayhem or your tribe or your clan or whatever it is.
I think it's important at this point to kind of say that it doesn't necessarily just have to be on a capitalist front that you're making this effort at. You can do other things as equally as well. Creating situations where you remove certain people from positions where they're ultimately harmful. If there is this guy who's, the regional manager of this particular district, and he's got everything scraped down to this bare minimum bone staff to reap maximum benefit out of the minimal cost of labor that they're spending. Collecting intel on, because everybody's got a vice, on what his vices are. Just enough to trap him up in his own shit. I mean, that's definitely one type of maneuvering that will help to level the playing field when you start knocking down some of these assholes that have climbed up on high horses. You know, then we start to really make some kind of leverage on a different plane outside of just weakening the resources of the overall machine, but also removing cutting out the cancer of it, so to speak.
It wouldn't just have to be in a corporate sense either. It could be in a political sense. If, you know, from the lowest, you know, possible ranking of the dog catcher who gets voted in, all the way up. And there are people. I mean, there are people who engage in that kind of activity for profit. But, you know, it's cultural hacking. Whether there's truth to it or not, if you have an opponent. Or somebody that you just feel like is not, you know, is not worthy of whatever they have attained through their, you know, kowtowing to the system, whether it's that asshole who's managing your district and it's because, you know, he's, you know, kissed the right ass and whatever his issue is, who now, you know, lords it over everyone below him, or it's, you know, it's some politician who you just know is dirty. Who, you know, went into the political world making promises of doing these things and making these things happen, and then did a 180 as soon as they were in the office, finding ways to, you know, to undermine those people's credibility, to undermine those people's, you know, positions of power and what have you. Exactly. It's the same mentality, and it's cutting away in. You know, from, you know, it's not necessarily striking a major blow. It's all the little things. So it's the cumulative effect of the little efforts you make that eventually lead to change.
Right on. And I mean, if you look at it in terms of our own feet and legs, there's only a few small tendons that really hold us completely up, and just snipping away at them one at a time, you know, eventually will cause us to not be able to walk or collapse. So, what's that?
Go ahead, man.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Okay, yeah, the call-in number is, again, 347-989-1371. And we want this Sunday show to be a strategy session. We want people to be talking about, and again, we're giving you this kind of idea hypothetically, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But we want to hear from people about, you know, what it is, you know, they might be thinking about doing, or what it is they think would be a good hypothetical possibility or hypothetical strategy for people to engage in. So I know there are a lot of people in the chat room talking about different ideas and different things that comments they got going on. Call in, man, 347-989-1371. We're at the midpoint in the show, and we have our commercial. Should I go ahead and roll it?
Yeah, go for it. When we come back, I'll kind of take us in a little bit of a different direction.
Right on.
Creative Oddity Studios. Stickers, T-shirts, skateboard decks, lighters, prints, posters, and many other fine pieces of merchandise. It's some of the best damn artwork you'll find on the internet. The creative assault and meandering of Jason Sorrell, T.C. Downey, and Vanessa Lee. Coleman! What is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to visit Creative Oddity Studios. Bondage art, digital manipulation, erotica, demon girls, fantasy, tattoo art, horror, occult, and we dare to call it artwork.
It's like candy, but for your eyes!
Check out our very popular books on the occult and Satanism, now available in hard copy and downloadable format.
Hoo-wah!
Check out our blogs on art, tattoo work, what life is like as a tattoo artist, social issues, philosophy, lowbrow culture in Austin, Texas, and eminentmind.info. You'll enjoy them.
If you can read!
Creative Oddities Studios, www.creativeoddities.com.
I like the naked girls.
Creative Oddities Studios!
All right. Coming back into this, we were, before we hit the commercial real quick, we were discussing actually discrediting or kind of undermining the authority of people who are, overtly, I don't know, more in charge within this global prison that we suffer within. But what I kind of wanted to make mention about was that the battle itself is not man against man. It's not like there is a physical us against them. It turns out, in a way, there is, but what's really the enemy is a certain line of thinking, a certain ideology. And so there comes a point with different people where they're saturated to different levels in this particular ideology. And some of them are so far gone that nothing you can ever say will wake them up from believing that, that what they're doing isn't in fact, beneficial to them. And so this leads me kind of to the thinking that when you know somebody like that, somebody who's saturated with this kind of ideology and they kind of, their entire existence itself just radiates the very ideology that has created this cancer, it becomes necessary to make it a more personal one-on-one thing at that point. This, in my mind, kind of leads back to something that was discussed on the L316 site around the time of it first opening up, and that was the idea of agency. Turning this person's world upside down simply because, they're nothing more than an emulator or some kind of transistor that existing within this particular construct. So, that kind of thing also is something that you can do directly to kind of begin to break down and deteriorate the real problem. The old saying, the friend of my enemy is my enemy, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and that kind of thing needs to really kind of be kept in the forefront of your mind as well.
All right, I do see it as cultural hacking, and it takes a level of awareness. And the awareness initially, I think, has to begin with a personal level of awareness. How will you benefit? How will you profit from this particular person being removed from whatever their position of power is? How will you profit from undermining this this issue? And like you said, it's not necessarily a matter of going, person to person, although there are going to be those people out there. And, Gurdjieff or Uspensky described the same kind of person, that person who is nothing more than a transistor for the system, nothing more than truly a cog that no amount of discussion, no amount of, of argument will ever awaken them to, their individuality. That they are the system. They describe those people as dead, as a step below the sleepers that the majority of us are engaged in, or the type of behavior that the majority of us are engaged in, the sleeping behavior. These people are, in fact, dead. They are totally defined by whatever the position is. But then that also has to be person to person. We could be talking about the city council, let's say, in your particular area, who they get into their political animals, they get into their positions purely for the political power, and they're not doing anything necessarily for the benefit of their cities other than maybe the top 1%, the top echelon, who they themselves come from. So their laws and their edicts, their ordinances tend to benefit only the very top part of the city's population, not everybody else. So if you start doing things that undermine the people's confidence in the city council itself, not just the people within it, but the idea of this council, that I think would go a long way toward, towards actually making some beneficial change.
Right, but I'm not just talking about acting against them, because that's an obvious thing. But what I mean is, Frank, he eats at Bill Bob's restaurant, and Bill Bob has acquired enough wealth that he now has a position at that that particular level, whatever it is, whether it's the city council or some other commission of some sort. Frank, who eats at Bill Bob's restaurant relentlessly, he also, stops by, gives the guy, whatever little means he thinks is going to butter him up to, maybe sway things his way. Even though his actual participation seems to be, not so consequential, it ultimately just the same as little transgressions can bring down this big machine, or constant small actions towards it can bring it down. Constant small actions can also keep it up. And so I guess what I'm saying is that you have to be willing to affect it, not just on that first layer where you're directly benefiting from it, but affect it also on the level that, you're indirectly benefiting from it by taking out, each person and kind of turning the table on its head, or making the punishment fit the crime, so to speak.
So saying like eliminating Frank's support for Bill Bob the restaurateur, making sure that Frank's not able to provide that support anymore, or souring that support so that Frank no longer is eating at that particular restaurant, something like that, right?
Precisely. That's exactly what I'm saying, yes.
Well, and I think with this kind of engagement, with this kind of cultural hacking, you've got to know your target. You got to know your enemy, and then you look for targets of opportunity. Just like you're saying, it's not just a matter of taking it to the teeth of the city council. That's what the Occupy movement's doing. That's what these different movements are doing, and that's one way to go. The other way is the subtle erosion of all that target's resources, which includes, Frank the supporter, which includes, all these different things that got going on. Their ability to park on particular streets, particular times, that kind of thing. Whatever options are afforded to you.
That's precisely it. I'm just saying it's important that as this effort is being made by individuals, they choose their level of participation based on what they're comfortable with, what they will get the most benefit for with the least amount of risk, and keep it consistent, keep it as a constant flow. It requires a great deal of strategizing on your own personal part. But if you really have come to despise the same things that I've come to despise, that I know you've come to despise, that I know that, other groups have raised their fists up and said, oh, fuck this, not in our name, then it's important that you continue that kind of transgression on a constant basis, not just pulling off the heist of the year and then fucking sitting on your couch thinking you did a good job. No, you go right back outside and knock the fucking mailman out, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. And it is. It's a matter of being consistent. It's a matter of making sure that you don't want to get bored. You don't want to give, you don't want to say you've done enough. Because as long as the system's still there, as long as it's still there to, lord over you and basically enforce its will upon you, you're not going to be free. That there's not going to be, you're not going to see that out that we're all eventually looking for. And it is, you have to determine your own level of participation. You have to make a choice. You have to, you have to make sure that the choices you're making make sense for you. Doing something stupid and ending up in prison because you did something stupid is stupid. If you're going to go to prison for something, make sure that it's for a particular cause that you're willing to do that for. If you're not willing to go to prison, then don't engage in that behavior. Don't engage in that activity. Be responsible for yourself, which is why, I advocate the idea of you want to make sure that there's some benefit to you. Whether, if it's your own entertainment, that's a benefit in itself. I guess the other thing, I just lost my train of thought. Bear with me just a second here.
Happens to me all the fucking time, man.
Oh, it's bad. I went to log into a website that I this is a website that I log into daily to check balances and things like that to see what I got going on. And I remember my password, knew my password totally. Couldn't remember my login ID. Could not for the life of me remember what it was. Had just logged into the site the day before. I don't write that shit down, you know, because it's a login ID. You know, I know it, but couldn't remember it. Had to call customer service to get them to tell me what it was. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, that is pretty bad, man. Whatever you're smoking, man, fucking ship some to me.
Yeah, I think it's old age.
I don't want none of that.
Along those lines, though, of shit that you're smoking, there's things you could be doing, I think, businesses you could be engaged in, means of acquiring your resources that are, you know, quasi-legal. And I think that if you have the opportunity to explore those options, you should. And that's kind of where I was going in my mind. You said something about how you want to make sure that whatever you do, you want to do it from your own comfort level. One of the things I think I would suggest or I would add to that initially, though, it requires that you be a little bit uncomfortable. Nobody's comfortable with the idea of, you know, stealing from your employer, okay? Whether it's most people are not fully comfortable with that. They're not fully comfortable with taking that risk. And it's because you're in a place in your head where you have to have a job. You have to have a job to pay your bills. That other options, other opportunities, other means aren't made available to you. You don't understand that yet. So initially, you have to be willing to get out of your comfort zone. The comfort zone that you're in has been specifically designed by the system to make you manageable, to make you controllable. So you have to be willing to break out of that comfort zone just a little bit. You have to be willing to go ahead and rethink things just a little bit. But once you're able to do that, once you're able to cross that line, then it's a matter of, okay, what risk am I willing to take? Where I can afford the consequences one way or another.
Right on. I mean, the thing of it is that you obviously don't want to be complacent. You obviously don't want to be sediment either. What I agree entirely that, you're going to initially be uncomfortable. There is a certain level of uncomfortability that is still comfortable, if that makes sense. You know, I certainly wasn't myself proposing that unless you know you're going to walk out completely scot-free, don't do it, because that would mean that you, you know, didn't even walk outside of your house. There's always that risk that, something will happen and the plan will go terribly wrong. But, you know, just based on the different levels of actual risk, what you, as the old term goes, deem that the juice is worth the actual squeeze. You know, so
right.
Meaning that the, the pillaging is worth the plunder.
Right on. Well, and we're talking about comfort level. I think one of the things people need to get over pretty much right now, if you're here tonight listening to this show and you're thinking about, you know, that the system sucks, the way society is going is wrong, and that you want to do something, you know, to act in a manner against the system, whether it's supporting, you know, people like us, this show, what have you, or, you know, taking some steps that have been the hypothetical things we're suggesting. Bear in mind, you are engaged in a, as far as the system is concerned, it is criminal. Any act against the system could be considered criminal, well, you know, no matter what that act is. Your striving for freedom is, by definition, in this system, a criminal act. Because what you're saying is, I don't want to follow your laws. I don't want to follow your edicts. I don't believe in your structure and your hierarchy. I don't want to engage in those kinds of things, these things with you. I choose to opt out. Well, there is no opt-out in the system. So if you're trying to opt out, you are a criminal. So it's just a matter of getting over that, getting over that little road bump, basically, and accepting that you know, this there's a certain level of criminality that you are already engaged in. One of the groups, and I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head now, one of the groups even has the word criminal in its title, that if they're engaged in these kind of, they're engaged in this very kind of, these very kind of things we're talking about, probably a little bit more since I haven't done a lot of research into them.
Are you talking about Crime of Think?
There we go. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think it's a really clever play on Crime Think, personally. But that seems to be the way to say it. And a lot of what they do, I mean, it's fascinating. If you haven't checked it out, man, I certainly don't want to, you know, create any kind of spoilers. I'd say, you know, look it up. It's Crimeth Inc. CRIMETHINC. Yeah, definitely check that out.
So...
It's okay, man. We've been going guns a-blazing for an hour and 20 minutes now, so it's all right to kind of get that. Go for it.
I want to throw out the call number again, or call-in number again, 347-989-1371. And I hope that people start using this forum and other forums that are out there as a means of, you know, of strategizing. I think the time, you know, we need to start kind of coordinating efforts. And I know that we're already, you know, you and I and others who are here are already moving in this direction, where, you know, if we're going to engage in these kinds of behaviors, if there's a way for us to share the benefits with one another, then we should look into it. If there's a way for us to, you know, if the assault is going to go against this particular entity, this particular organization, or this particular system, well, then, you know, this is what, you know, we're doing, and this is what we might suggest that other people do as well if they want to participate in that effort. And it's going to be, you know, just communicating with one another, figuring out what it is we want to do. And, like, I know there are guys that are, there are people, I mean, in the chat room right now, you know, I'm looking at their names in the chat room right now who have talked about this kind of thing, who, you know, they want to do something. And I think it's going to take more, though, than just building a website. I think it's going to take more than just engaging in yet another blog or shooting yet another YouTube video. I think a lot of this activity, we have to start coordinating these things offline. We actually have to start making some efforts that require us to step away from our computers and maybe actually go out and do something. What those things are, you know, this all can be worked out as we start having these discussions and conversations. But the conversations that need to be had, and the sooner the better. So, you know, use this forum, use the WordPress, the Ooze and Eminent Mind to begin having these conversations. Hell, Satanic International Network. Let's start having it go on there. Learn how to run faster than the cops. Somebody just posted that in the chat room. Learn how to run faster than the cops.
That's definitely a good thing, but sometimes running faster is not necessarily as important as running smarter. You know, not knowing where exactly to go. So, I kind of want to point that out. You don't have to be the fucking, the next Olympic superstar. To actually get away from the police officers, you just have to be intelligent enough to know about which corner of the alley to duck down and what cloak and hat to throw on right after.
That, or you engage in an activity that the police don't even recognize as criminal, not immediately. They don't see what's going on until it's too late, until it's already done.
And that's, and the whole thing of this is, it's not, this isn't an outward call for criminality as the mode of behavior, but just that it's more of a recognition that because you're beginning to act in the idea that this is by your own reconnaissance and it's by your own self-government and it's not obstructed by, you know, external influences telling you what the fuck you should do, that it will, in fact, be branded criminal at some point or another. I mean, it's kind of an inevitability, as you've been saying over and over throughout this show. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I think is important to put out there, is that we're not saying go out there and commit a crime, but because what we are saying is stand up and resist this thing, we're ultimately still actually saying go out there and commit a crime. And it's kind of a paradox we're stuck in here on the ooze, but it's one I think we're willing to bear it through.
Right. It's, yeah, you don't, and the idea of breaking laws to break laws. I mean, there's a certain appeal to that mental exercise, I guess, breaking laws to break laws, or committing acts of evil just for committing acts of evil, however you fucking define that. And the reason I use those words, I actually had somebody, you know, approach me on YouTube, you know, anonymously, of course, they're using some screen name and everything else, and have the required 666 in the screen name and all that shit. But they were, you know, they're telling me about how, you know, they're committing acts of evil, that they, you know, they go out of their way every day to, you know, to sin in some manner, to do whatever, to break a law, to, you know, to do these things. That this is what they do. And while there may be some, you know, there may be some benefit, I guess, to that type of thing, if you're doing it just because, that's problematic in my mind. And the reason it's problematic is because you're still being defined by that system. Your behavior still falls within the parameters determined by the system. They just are opposed to or in opposite of what is considered tolerable or allowable. So when, you know, it's like being told, you know, don't throw rocks through windows. So you go out of your way to throw a rock through every fucking window. Well, the behavior is still being determined by somebody else. You know, you're not, there's no real reason for you to do it other than you were told not to. I find that ridiculous. But if you have some purpose in throwing rocks through windows, then, you know, by all means. But if it's just because you were told not to do it, that lacks any sense of awareness just as much as not doing it for no particular reason lacks awareness.
Right. It's just trading up one system for the next. You know, you're still being defined by that good guy, bad guy paradigm that you claim to want to be, you know, separate from.
Right, right. Yeah, there's no independence on, if you've got, the example comes to my mind is if you've got the Catholic Church saying that this is what the devil does, this is what evil is, and you go, you know what, I don't like the Catholic Church, so I'm going to go ahead and fulfill that role. Well, you're in a way empowering the Catholic Church, because they can point to you now and go, that's the example. That is what, you know, the devil does. That's what evil is. Instead of, you know, breaking away completely, truly breaking away, you know, not being a mirror of it, but actually being something different, something other than, something, you know, something they can't define, and therefore they're not prepared to deal with.
Right on. I mean, I think that's, you know, the thing of it is you have to have a personal consistency, and I think that that's what's important. And I know at the moment it sounds like I'm stepping up on a soapbox, but I mean, ultimately, if you'll, you know, stand for anything, you stand for nothing at all. You know what I'm saying? And that's the whole problem I see with it, is that if you are not defined by anything, then you're not defined at all. And that, you know, so it leads to more of the idea that you choose what you're defined by. You know, you pick your own dogma, so to speak, and then be consistent about it. You know, don't be hypocritical. If, you know, something's wrong on one level, when you're looking at it at the next level, then it should still be conclusively wrong. I mean, that's just my personal worldview. But, I mean, you have to have some kind of honor.
Right, right. And that, by that we mean you establish your own standards. You determine for yourself what is, you know, what is best for you. And then as we each make those determinations for ourselves, as we stop being told what's right or wrong by the system, and actually based on our own experiences, based on our own common sense, based on our own internal direction and inspiration, determine what is or isn't right or wrong, for ourselves. And then, of course, you know, there's only so many options out there. What will happen is there'll be this, you know, there'll be this coalescing of ideologies where, you know, and as has happened throughout human history, people who agree along certain lines of thinking will gather together. They will form cohesive units. They will engage and trade with one another because they understand each other. They understand where each other's coming from. They share the same values. They share the same ideas. So that will come about naturally. What we have now is its force. It is you're born into it, and therefore the game's set against you. The box that you're in has already been defined. It's not your own box. So you find yourself, you know, even if you disagree, you find yourself struggling to conform. And that, you know, that effort to conform, that effort to be, making you feel like you're inadequate because you haven't conformed is another tool of the system used to, you know, to control and, you know, manipulate us.
Right. I think ultimately that's the idea, is to struggle away from the control of manipulation. And then, you know, in doing that, you have to be prepared that at some point you may reach two different things. You may reach a point in which you need to use the very same tactics to liberate yourself from. And should you so happen to reach that point, you'll then again reach the point where it's no longer necessary. And you have to step off of that. You know, it's kind of a matter of willing to continue to develop yourself in one particular direction or the other. It's the fact that you owe yourself some form of work just for the simple matter of that's, well, the purpose of our existence is to work on ourselves as far as I can see.
Right on. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it's, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just laughing because we've got so many commenting on our current logo. Yeah, so it's funny. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, if it looks too familiar, it's, you know, I'm sure the reason he's offended is because it's just too close to what he's got going on in his own, you know, pants there. So you know, sorry for, you know, that, I guess, or about your luck, you know, consequences of being born that way. But anyways, I guess another thing is, if nothing happens, I mean, you're going to be responsible for your own effort. You're going to be responsible for your own resource. And I think that's ideal, is that if you can go out and get for yourself the things you need rather than having to deal with some middleman, rather than having to have some sort of intercessor provide for you the means to do so. There are some benefits to, you know, being in a community where you can count on, you know, this guy who runs the market, this guy who grows the food, this guy who takes care of the cattle or whatever. There's a benefit to that. You know, I would rather go get my steaks from the butcher than have to go butcher the animal myself. You know, that's just convenient for me in my mind. But I would like to deal with that person on a one-to-one basis, where, you know, what I have to offer as, you know, in exchange, whether it's, you know, material goods or my own time and effort, gets me a direct, you know, direct access versus, you know, the rigmarole we have to deal with now, the means of control that are in place to make sure that there, you know, these limitations are in place to make sure that we still stay controlled.
Right on, man. I mean, you know, ultimately it comes down to one line of thinking and my thoughts, or at least the way that I look at it, and that is, if I am to call myself a free man, capable of governing himself, resistant, you know, to the idea that someone else should have more right to govern me than I do, then I have to actually, I don't know, willingly participate in my own personal governance. And I know that that's probably a little bit to wrap your mind around when you want to, you know, pop on here and try to troll us with all this bullshit. You know, ultimately, you know, it comes down to you know, who's doing what.
All right, and the call-in number, by the way, we got about 25 minutes left, 347-989-1371, if you want to call in and share any thoughts during the last half hour here or so. Yeah, it's you know, if you come to the determination that you are self-actualized, if you come to the determination, you reach that point where you can say, you know, I am the one determining my, you know, my destiny. I am the one who is in control of my daily choices. Then anything that opposes that viewpoint is your enemy. Anything that opposes the idea that you can make these determinations for yourself, that you're responsible to yourself, that you have the ability to do things for yourself on your own. Anything about the, you know, about the world around you that says no, in fact, you don't have those options, is your enemy. It's denying you as an individual, denying you as a human being. And when you look around, there's a lot of that going on. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of systems in place that that tell you that you do not have, you are not self-actualized, that you do not have the ability to go out and do for yourself what you want to do. You do not have the ability to be responsible for yourself. You know, the caller that had called in had pointed out that, you know, what we have going on right now is you've got people with a gun in your face telling you what it is you're going to do or you isn't going to do, or your record, or is that there's that possibility. And my point of view is that state of being exists all the time. Our government rules by, you know, by gunpoint, basically. They have a gun to the backs of each and every person in the society. So we are, you know, we are obligated to obey, because not doing so means that these people have the option of physical force or using physical force to take us down. But what we, you know, fail to realize or fail to recognize is that there are more of us than there are of them. So while they may have, you know, they may have the guns, they may have the means of control or the means to intimidate, they don't have the numbers to support that level of intimidation. If everybody were to wake up one day and say, you know what, we're done with the government, with the way things are running, with, you know, going to work, when we're done with all of that, there would be nothing these people could do. There would be, you know, even if they were to get all the cops to show up to work that day, the cops could not possibly round us all up and force us into labor camps. It just wouldn't happen. But, you know, of course, that kind of a scenario is way too far out. It's not something that would ever probably actually happen. So what we're left doing, since we are a smaller force, we're left with engaging in guerrilla tactics. We're left with engaging in subterfuge and obfuscation and subtle efforts, doing what we can to get as much for ourselves as possible, and then hopefully sharing with those who are engaged in this effort with us.
Absolutely. Sorry, I'm kind of responding to things in jest, so. I don't know. We got about 20 minutes left, man, and I'm really it's either the alcohol kicking in or the other stuff that I've been smoking that kind of leaves me limited in what I actually want to express. So if you got some other ideas of what we're talking about, or if we want to just try again to encourage people to call in.
Yeah, the number is 347-989-1371, and what I would hope or recommend people to do who are catching the show in the archive or, you know, listening to the show live, that they check out eminentmind.info and that they participate. That's the other thing, that it's really necessary to engage in the conversation, that to be involved in what's going on, at least at that level where you're discussing different ideas. So, you know, check out eminentmind.info, check out the Ooze WordPress page. Again, what we do there is we're posting these show topics as, you know, as we get ready to do the shows. But the reason we're posting the show topics there is because there you have the opportunity to comment on them even before and after the show, as a matter of fact, but especially before the show. So if you see the kind of direction we're going in and want to throw some things down before the show even occurs, it makes it easier for us to bring those things up during the show. So, you know, we're looking for that as well, but it's another opportunity, another place for people to kind of engage in this overall conversation. And it's time in my mind. It's time to start looking for, you know, ways to, you know, to deal with this system, to start taking the monster down, and to, you know, benefit for yourself and, you know, into, you know, start determining your own laws, living that amoral kind of, you know, life, but instead developing your own code of honor, your own way of behaving, your own way of dealing with things, and then going from there. And I'm sure that we will have enough parallels in our behaviors and our ideologies that we'll begin to coordinate our efforts.
Absolutely agreed, ma'am. Absolutely agreed. I guess maybe I should talk a little more about some of the ideas that I've had for what might be, you know, what might be a good way to engage the problem that we have at hand. I think the first thing is to always be looking for an opportunity to hold some form of advantage, no matter what the situation is that you're facing at that point. You know, that requires a certain level of discipline and attention to details that you may normally not pay attention to, but there is enough resources available on critical thinking and on strategizing to give you the kind of foundation that you might need for deciding, you know, what moves will benefit you the most ultimately. Because, I mean, but let's face it, this isn't the idea that we're fighting for some noble cause, that we want to defeat the evil tyrant that reigns over us. This is more the idea that we're trying to eliminate other people's disposition of influence over us.
Right on.
I don't know if I'm, I might be rambling a little in the wrong directions or whatever, but I mean, one of the things I would certainly be looking at, there's a book out there, it's called The Art of Deception. It gives a lot of really good ideas of different ways that you can transgress, at least on more of a, hacking / con level. One of the things you might also look into is the personal philosophies of different strategists. One in particular I'm thinking of is a chess player, but a brilliant strategist nonetheless, a guy named Alexander Alekhine. You know, these kind of things help to develop the resources mentally you'll need to actually I don't know what I want to say, continue to figure out what it is that you need to create the effect that ultimately will benefit you. And I'm, man, holy shit, am I tripping over my own words at this point?
Well, I guess along with that, I would recommend, if the information is going to be outdated because he was writing in the 60s and 70s, but Abbie Hoffman, who, you know, was probably, you know, the most upfront, you know, cultural hero along with this kind of mentality, wrote books, Steal This Book, as a matter of fact. If you want to read something that carries the spirit of what we're talking about, if not giving you, you know, some ideas to different strategies, because a lot of the information there, of course, is outdated. Way of production, the means of production have kind of changed since the 1970s, but it still gives you an idea of the kind of thinking that's going on. Abbie Hoffman's an excellent resource, and it wasn't just Steal This Book. He's written several, you know, there were several books he wrote, or several, you know, pamphlets he was part of that are worthwhile reading to give you an idea of, you know, just what this thing is about.
Right. Yeah. For some reason, that book title seems oddly familiar. Is it possible that that's the same author as The Art of Deception?
Steal This Book? I don't know if Hoffman wrote The Art of Deception or not. Let's see here.
I'm taking a look real quick here on Google. I mean, for some reason, it was either mentioned in sequence in some review or something, but I'm taking a look right now to see No, actually, Kevin Mitnick is the person who actually wrote the book, The Art of Deception. I'm not really certain why it is that still this book was intimately connected in my mind. Maybe because the two both espouse a similar philosophy.
Well, I'm sure that Mitnick, reading through the reviews and everything else on The Art of Deception, probably, you know, you recognize Hoffman as a kindred spirit, acting in a different manner. Of course, you know, Mitnick's a hacker, and Hoffman was a revolutionary communist, basically, a hippie. So they're approaching basically the same social issues from two different directions.
Let me ask you something real quick here, before we really move through what you're talking about. Are you actually have the chat full launched with the moderator controls?
No, I just have the mini chat going right now.
All right, I can't actually get the full one up. So if you'll launch that and just kick this stupid ass out of our chat room so I can keep my focus and continue to talk, that'd be awesome.
Okay.
All right, because I keep trying to fucking load up, and it's just sitting there on the screen, and it's probably because my internet connection is not that great tonight. So, you know, if we can just get them the fuck out of here, we can do the last 13 minutes of this show without me thinking to myself that the you know, the world is really infected with that retarded of fucking people.
All right, I'm working on it right now.
No problem. They apparently don't seem to realize that they are the exact type of sack of fucking shit that we're trying to wipe out of this world anyways. Useless fucking leeches who think it's their business to look in everybody else's window and tell them what they can or can't do. It's the same fucking moral fucking soapbox asshat that fucking irritates me on a daily basis.
All right. So here we go, about 12 minutes left anyways. Again, if you want to call in, 347-989-1371, and we're going to try to do this every Sunday. And ideally, we'd want people to go ahead and engage, you know, in this discussion so that, you know, again, it's a strategy session, so we'll have different ideas flowing and different discussions going on, different things that would be worthwhile to pursue. Let's see here.
Right on.
And I think I just gave him the boot.
Awesome. Yeah, they were threatening to call in just before, so maybe they'll call in and just kind of confirm exactly what it is that I consider to be the cancer of the world by opening their fucking idiotic mouth.
So
anyway, 10 minutes left. I'm curious if you'll get the opportunity to go over that page and you know, kind of give me a little bit of feedback so I can publish it this evening and kind of move along.
Well, maybe I shouldn't publish it then, because I think I've already published it.
Oh, did you publish it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then I'll take it you felt that I addressed what I needed to correctly according to what we discussed.
Absolutely. So, yeah, there's a new page on the Eminent Mind website. It's the title's The Dark Horse, And this is something TC was writing about that takes the idea of Gurdjieff's Fly Man and applies it through the lens of Anton Lang's recognition that not everything has to be causal, that there's the opportunity, the possibility of breaking away from the causal system. Flyman, you know, works to break away from a prison, and Long's, you know, sinister version of things leads towards, you know, not even having anything relative to do with the prison. And it's what you're referring to as the dark horse. So yeah, if you want to check that out, eminentmind.info, just look up the dark horse. It has been published, so it should be viewable by the public.
Yeah, I just actually checked the site. It's there.
All right.
So it is definitely there. And we have a caller. Imagine that.
You're going to bring him on?
Yep. 408, you're on the ooze. What's on your brain?
Yeah, you sick motherfuckers. I'm going to tell y'all right now, y'all better take that penis pic off.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, so he's got a phallic issue apparently. I went and muted him right because I wanted to interrupt him right there before he went into his rant. And I'll continue to do so. I'll bring him back on and I'll interrupt him because this is our radio show and we do that kind of shit. So this guy's really hung up on penises for some reason. I don't know if he saw too much of his daddy's penis or what.
I think what it is some latent testament to the fact that Indians did fuck buffaloes. Let's go ahead and hear some more of this inbred horse shit.
Hello,
hey,
you're on the news. It's fucking great.
Yeah, I want y'all to get that penis. I know it's a penis. The two O's and O's, they form the body.
See, and I'm just trying to understand why he sees penises in everything he looks at. He assumes that that's a penis, that's a phallic symbol. He doesn't recognize that, you know, the infinity symbol, the brimstone symbol. He just sees a penis. Now, if his penis actually looks like that, well, then, you know, I'd hate to see the mutant children that thing would produce, which is, it's just a damn shame. It's really unfortunate that this is how he wants to spend his time too. If he's looking for penises, and you know, I don't know if he's looking in bathrooms and men's restrooms, public restrooms, and things like that. Is he checking out gay porn? Is he rallying against penises there as well? I guess we'll bring him back on the air and we'll ask him.
Right.
You're on the news. You're talking about your penis.
Yes, cease and desist with the penis pictures before I report to the BTR. That's all I got to say. This is non-negotiable.
Oh,
okay.
You're done then. You're done. Your conversation's over. That's all you want to say.
I wanted you to snatch that picture off. You shouldn't be exposing kids to stuff
like
that.
We appreciate you calling in the news. And if that's all you had to say, you have a great night. Well, that was nice.
Yeah, I think it just proves that you know, you only see what you want to see, and apparently this guy wants to see penises and everything.
Right. All right. When he goes to BTR, which I hope he does, you know, and reports it, he's got reporters to BTR. I can pretty much do that voice. It's almost like I was calling in. I'm gonna report y'all to BTR, and little children are gonna see that and everything. And so yeah. I don't want my sister seeing that while I'm cornholing her. Yeah, that's fine, buddy. But yeah, if BTR actually looks into it, I mean, they're probably gonna go, you know, what the fuck is this, you know, slack jawed faggot thinking about? You know, this retard has no fucking clue. So, but good on you, man. Good talking to you and stuff. anyway.
We sure wrote that number down so we can call him back and give him some of the good old Southern charm. You know, we got a problem with your penis in there and your sister.
Yeah.
Fucking dumbass.
That's awesome.
Rednecks.
That is awesome.
It blows me away when someone is so hell-bent to expose some form of provocativity, which is not even there. That just that speaks volumes about their own personal psychology.
Well, when you've got nothing else to do with your time, apparently you can't afford cable television. You know, you had to make a choice, the internet or cable. And you're looking for something to do. There's that website where you can just chat with random people. I forget what it's called. But when you're bored with that, or you've talked to the 14 other guys who are looking for a chick to talk to have internet sex with, you run out of that. You've got nowhere else to go. Well, then you end up on BTR. But I wanted to put out there real quick for our fans who are listening, for people who might be checking out the show in the archive. The Ooze is working on a logo change, and I think we should put that out there right now. That not because of redneck trolls calling in to talk about how we're going to go ahead and that the this is a phallic symbol or what have you. We're working on a logo that is less borrowing from symbols of the past, less representative of certain ideologies. And more representative of the Ooze, so something more unique that's recognizable as the Ooze rather than the brimstone symbol or the infinity symbol in the cross or what have you, what other people might see there, or a penis. So when that change comes, I don't want anybody to think that we were unduly influenced by, Hilljacks, that we're doing that on our own. And we're still in the design process. We're a long way away from actually getting it all taken care of. Hey, there's his phone number, TC, if you want to write that shit down.
Right on. I think this phone number definitely is worthy of going in the members will prank call later.
Yeah, I wonder if he realizes that we can call him back. So, that's nice.
That's the wonderful thing about the tools that they give us. They actually give us the ability to handle our business without actually dealing with these fucking ass backwards fucking goat fucking faggots.
Well, this must be asleep or tired or something, and that's why he's not banging. That's why he's not banging her or whatever. Instead of he's calling in these shows. I see that. Do you want to bring in Daryl on the line?
Yeah, we only got a couple minutes left, but I always like hearing from Daryl, so.
Daryl, what's going on? Oh, what happened?
Do what?
Oh, there he is.
Daryl.
Yeah, my bad. I was just a bit...
Yeah, less than a minute, dude.
The idiot that called had a similar accent to mine, and that just kind of pissed me off. So I wanted to represent the small population of individuals that live in my part of the world that aren't necessarily goat fuckers.
your actions, your thoughts speak for themselves, man. We would never consider you to be a goat fucker, and even if you were a goat fucker, I think you have the ideological fortitude to justify doing so. So no worries, man.
All right.
I see nothing but benefit from having a suave southern gentleman accent. I'm sure that does wonders with the ladies and everything. But when you start running off the mouth, when you got diarrhea of the mouth because you don't know what the fuck it is you're talking about. That's when it comes across as retarded.
Oh, yeah.
You do not have that problem.
Thank you very much, man.
All right. Anyway, guys, time's up. I'm going to run this outro and then I guess go announce on Sin the new page. And, yeah, that'll be it. Have a good evening.
Right on, man. Catch you guys next Sunday.